see how much of it we can get done today. It was quite of a long topic, but we can try to get a bit structure in. Essentially, we focused on a sugya which appears, the real sugya appears in Pesachim and Avodah Zarah and places like that, but it's an idea that comes up in Shas very frequently, especially in Maseches Bava Metzia. It appears a number of times in Maseches Bava Metzia, including the first parak a couple of times, more than once. It's either above or beneath the surface in the first parak, so that was kind of our first parak link. And we focused specifically on the fact that the Isser of Lufnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol has a component to it that tells us that we're not allowed to facilitate the Naveira. To help somebody commit a transgression
is included in this pasuk.
And that's where most of the literature is and most of the discussion is, and that's what we spent a lot of time talking about. But first, trying to understand it in the context of the pasuk. But essentially, we see that there are really what seems to be three Isurim that emanate from the pasuk of Lufnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol. Now, first off, you have the literal translation of the pasuk, that if you see somebody blind walking down the road and you stick a rock in front of him so that he will physically trip, it would seem like that's a violation of this Isser. Although it prompts one to say, you know, who exactly is the Torah's intended audience? Is the Torah written for jerks? What kind of person thinks that that's okay behavior and needs the Torah to come and say, by the way, stay away from that? Is this the moral level that we have reached, that this is how we're being addressed? Hard to believe. So we find that Chazal tell us that there are additional levels. Even on the physical level, you know, there are those who understand it a little more broadly. It's not just about tripping up blind people specifically, but it's about any kind of public physical hazard. So, for example, you find that the Yad Ramah and Baba Basra and others understand that the prohibition of Nezikin, which we have made reference to a couple times recently in different contexts, maybe perhaps derived from the Isser Lufnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol. So you could understand it referring in a physical context, but not necessarily as blatantly cruel as putting a rock in front of a blind person, but in a broader sense. But nonetheless, the pasuk in its pashut interpretation, that seems to be one shot. Although, again, it's a little bit hard to believe that we think of that. So there is a view that Mechassinuf discusses that maybe that's not even the pshat in the pasuk, and that if you were to do that, you'd violate a lot of other things, but you wouldn't violate Lifnei Iver, which prompts the question that we generally say, Ein mikra yotze midei pshuto, which means a pasuk can mean a lot of things, can have interpretations on many different levels, but it always has to mean at least what it means. It can't not mean this pashut translation. So then Mechassinuf has a discussion about that. Is that really the literal translation of the pasuk? It probably is. Presumably you are in violation of Lufnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol by creating such public hazards, particularly for people who are not able to see. But we know from Chazal that there are two other interpretations as well, that if you give somebody bad advice, the Torah's Kohanim tells us, that is a violation of Lufnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol. Now, they're considered to be an Iver, in the sense that they're not fully informed and therefore liable to trip, let's say financially or whatever area it is, to make bad decisions. And to push them to trip through your bad advice, that's also considered to be a violation of Lifnei Iver. And then the one that we focused on most heavily is what this Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah and Pesachim and many times in Bava Metzia and elsewhere in Shas, that if you help somebody to do an Aveira, that's also a violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol, and that's what we were going to discuss most of the time. But even just focusing on that requires us to understand the relationship between these three Isurim. And we suggested the following framework here, that in the discussion of Lifnei Iver, there is a classic Chakira the Achronim all discuss. And then there's another one. So there's basically two fundamental chakiras you'll find in much of the literature. So what we wanted to premise is that the two chakiras are certainly tied into each other, but that both of them are affected by an earlier question you could ask in terms of simply interpreting the pasuk. The Sneiver lo siten mechshol, coming out to mean three yisurim. How does that happen? Or should we say that it's Torah Balpeh telling us additional meaning? So we have the way we read it, the Torah Shabbat, and Chazal have come and told us there are other interpretations to this pasuk as well, yielding three yisurim. Or should we say, no, it's not the case that there are three yisurim here. There's one yisur. It's just very broad. The Torah is saying, don't exploit someone's disadvantage and cause them to hurt themselves. And it's true in any arena in which it's relevant. Don't take somebody who's physically blind and cause them to trip. Don't take someone who is missing information and cause him to stumble personally and making a bad decision. And don't take someone who is spiritually disadvantaged in terms of a tendency to sin and get him in spiritual trouble by helping him out with the sin itself. So that's the question that we premise this on. Is it that there are three yisurim coming from one pasuk? Or is it that there is one pasuk, it's just and one iser, it's just applied in different arenas? And this is very, very relevant, we thought, to the first big chakira that's asked, which affects a lot of other issues. The question of, how do you understand this avera to help somebody sin? There are two very different ways you could understand it. One way is that you could suggest it's kind of an accessory principle. The same way if I drive the getaway car for a bank robber and I never enter a bank or say stick them up or put the money in the bag or any of that, but I just drive the getaway car, so I could go to jail for bank robbery because I am an accessory. So too, maybe this pasuk tells us that we have such a principle in halacha as well. That not only does the Torah want us not to, for example, eat trey food, but it doesn't want us to facilitate eating trey food or any other iser. And the chiddush of Ufneiver is to tell us that the enabler is included in the aveira itself. Alternatively, you could say, no, there is no such idea. That's a chiddush. Too big of a chiddush. Rather, you could say that it's not about your enabling, it's not that you're partaking in the aveira through your facilitation, but it's that the pasuk tells us don't cause people to fall. And if you help somebody fill out his desire to sin, you are helping him to fall. And therefore, you're tripping him, so you are hurting him. You are causing him to injure himself through his spiritual misdeeds. So those two understandings, which have very, very major nafkaminas, as we said, life and death nafkaminas, which we'll discuss in a minute, clearly seems to flow very directly out of the question of one Isser versus three Isser. Because if you want to say that it's all one concept, just one idea applied in different settings, so then the accessory pshat really makes no sense. Because it doesn't fit into the pasuk's context at all. Two possibilities that exist in the Avera context. You don't have the same two possibilities in the physical raf, physically blind person context. If that's all the pasuk meant, don't trip a person who's physically blind, no one would have any suffix. Oh, really? Why shouldn't I do that? Oh, I shouldn't do that because if he trips, it's as if I tripped also, and I hurt myself also. Is that what it means? Clearly not. Nobody would think it means that. It's obvious the problem is you are causing him to hurt himself, and you are inflicting this injury on him. So too, helping with an aveira is the same idea. So if you want to say it's all from that pasuk, one iser broadly applied, you're really limited to that interpretation. If you want to say that it's an accessory idea, if you help out with the Avera, it's as if you do it yourself. So then you don't really have a basis for that in the literal Pasuk translation, and you have to say that it's Torah Sheba Peh giving us a different level of interpretation. So far, so good. Everyone understands that? Okay, so before explaining some of the nafgaminas of the accessory versus tripping somebody else up shot, so just some details about what we've said so far. So first of all, the major details of helping somebody with an Avera and the prohibition of Lifnei Iver, one thing it's important to know is that the Isser D'Oraisa to help somebody with an Avera only applies if it's what the Gemara calls Trei Avra Dinara, which means two banks of the river. And that's a reference to the idea that you are crucial to the process. The Avera cannot happen without you. In such a context, so then that's when you violate Lifnei Iver Menat Torah. If, however, it is Chad Avra Dinara, meaning that it's one side of the river, in other words, the person has access to what he wants to sin with, and he could get it himself, it's not as if he is on one side of the river and his cheeseburger's on the other side. So then, that's not an Isser D'Oraisa of Lifnei Iver for you to help. However, there is an Isser D'Rabbanan. The Rishonim in Avodah Zarah and in the beginning of Masechet Shabbos all tell us that there is an Isser of Misayeya Lidei Ovrei Avera, that even in a non-crucial role, you can't help someone sin. And as we mentioned, there is a whole discussion about this in the later literature. What's the nature of that Isser D'Rabbanan? Is that Isser D'Rabbanan an expansion of Lifnei Iver? So Lifnei Iver Minat Torah is only if you're crucial, and Misayeya is even if you're not so crucial? Or should we say, no, that it's really coming from somewhere else, that we have a mitzvah in the Torah of Tokhika. If you see somebody sinning, you're supposed to set him straight. Nowadays, meaning already from the time of the Gemara, it's not clear how effective we can be in that role, whether or not we can say something that's going to have the proper impact. But to help with the Avera, to actually partake, so that would seem to certainly fly in the face of the Tochacha principle. So maybe the Isser D'Rabbanan to help with an Avera is because of this idea of Tochacha rather than because of Lifnei Iver. That's a whole discussion, which could have implications, but we won't focus on it. We also mentioned that this question that we just said about is it one Isser in different arenas or is it three Isserim, that also comes up because there is a discussion. Everyone seems to agree that there's no Malkus for Lifnei Iver L'Zitei Nefesh.
The question
is why not? If it's an Isser in the Torah, why are there no Malkus? So there are a couple of suggestions, some of which we'll come back to later, but it's also interesting that some assert that the issue is Lav Shebeklalos. What does that mean? It means if you have an Isser in the Torah, which is interpreted in meaning many different Isurim, so then we generally say that there's no Malkus for those Isurim. It's a Machlokus whether it means there's no Malkus for the additional Isurim, there's no Malkus for any of the Isurim, but whatever it is, Lav Shebeklalos means that you have a couple of Isurim all tied to the same pasuk. So why is that necessarily the proper categorization here? You could say it's not a couple of Isurim, it's all one Isur. So those who would say it's a Lav Shebeklalos are kind of taking a stand on this foundational issue that we're raising. How do you understand Lifnei Iver's expansion into other territory? We should have a question. Okay. So again, one other point before getting into some of the bigger nafkaminas is in terms of whether you see it as an accessory or you see it as you're tripping up the other guy, so then that also affects the question, is this an Aveira ben Adam l'makom or an Aveira ben Adam l'chaveru? Let's assume for a second the Aveira that you're helping out is an Aveira ben Adam l'makom. So if you are an accessory to the guy, so then you are also committing an Aveira ben Adam l'makom. But if you are hurting him by getting him in trouble upstairs, so then he might be doing an Aveira ben Adam l'makom, but you are doing an Aveira ben Adam l'chaveru. And the practical nafkamina between the two, is generally the case if you invoke an Adam l'chaveru ben Adam l'makom distinction, practical nafkamina is, do you require mechila? If somebody helped another person to do an Aveira, do we say that the enabler should have to ask the sinner for mechila because he caused him to have a spiritual stumbling? Now, as we mentioned, practically speaking, that's going to be awkward either way, because in most cases it's going to be a difficult process, because either the guy still does this Aveira happily and he's not going to really understand why you're asking him to forgive you for helping him, he wants you to help him more, or he's done tshuva from this Aveira, in which case one could argue that it's prohibited to bring it up by asking him for mechila. So that's an interesting question, whether or not you're allowed to ask for mechila at the expense of causing someone emotional pain. We mentioned this in Machlokas, Rabbi Saul Salanter and the Chafetz Chaim, about whether you should ask mechila if you spoke Lashon Hara about someone and they don't know about it. But it sounds like from the Chafetz Chaim that you should ask mechila, even though they don't know about it, and in order to do so, you're going to have to hurt their feelings by telling them. And Rabbi Saul Salanter said, Chas v'shalom, how could you do that? You're not allowed to hurt someone's feelings. That's the topic of the fourth parak of Bava Metzia, Onos Dvarim. So you're not allowed to commit Onos Dvarim just so you could have a clear conscience, just so you could ask for mechila. So, as somebody pointed out, my friend Mendel Breitstein, who first made the Sahara, that it would emerge that this would have another nafkamina, that if the machlokas is, are you allowed to violate Onos Tavarim in order to ask for mechila? So what about this case? So let's say you invite somebody out over to your house on Pesach and you serve them chametz. You're in violation of Nehivar. And then Shavuos night, he learns that he's not supposed to be eating chametz on Pesach. So he does tshuva. So comes in Kippur time, you want to ask him for mechila for agreeing machshul him. Are you allowed to ask him for mechila? If doing so, you're going to have to remind him that he used to eat chametz on Pesach, and that's going to cause him emotional pain. So that's the machlokas in general about anos dvarim and mechila, so maybe it could apply here. So the point is, if you want to say the nafkamina is mechila, it's hard to imagine it really comes up so much because it's technically very difficult to have it make sense. But that theoretically would be a nafkamina, as Rav Moshe Feinstein discusses in his tshuvas, that presumably lifnei iver has some component to it that is ben adam l'makom and some component that is ben adam l'chaveru. Excuse me. Okay. So, what are the big nafkaminas of the question of whether you're an accessory or whether it's that you're hurting the other guy? So, a big nafkamina would be, as we said, literally life and death nafkamina, is what if you have an aveira, let's say that is, for example, yehareg val yavla, that one is not supposed to violate this aveira even at the expense of death. So do we extend the Isser Lifnei Iver even to this, extend the Isser Yehar Vayavar even to the Lifnei Iver? Just parenthetically, a little bit of a preview, this is a major topic in this week's Parsha. Right? And it's a major topic for tomorrow's Chumashu because it's a major topic in Sheni of this week's Parsha. What am I talking about? What happens in this week's parasha in Sheni? Egel Hazav, which is an act of Udazara, and Aaron is forced at pain of death, basically, or his belief that he'd be murdered, to participate in it. And the Gemara says that he made a cheshbon that he'd get killed if he didn't help out. So maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow, but get a little bit of an advance. So that's the connection between this, the synergy between this topic and tomorrow's parsha discussion, that what should Aaron HaKohen do? So you have a situation where your life is at stake to help somebody out, do one of the big three. Is that Yehari Valyavo or not? So that should emerge from this question, that if it's considered like you're doing the Avera itself, so then if it's Yehari Valyavo, it's Yehari Valyavo to help it too. But if it's not considered as if you're doing the Avera, whoever pulls the trigger is doing the Avera, and you're doing something else, you're tripping up the Avarian. So that issur of tripping up the Avarian, we have no basis to say that it's Yehari Valyavo. So the Ramah was makel on this, and it was kind of a complicated, if you recall, machlokus harishonim. It was a machlokus, the Balamor and the Ramban. It was a very complicated context. I guess to try to explain it quickly, that basically the Gemara and Sanhedrin, so Purim topic, so a little bit off on our synergy right after Purim, the Gemara and Sanhedrin asks, says that there are three averus for which you have to give up your life, Yehari Valyavo. And then the Gemara says also that if an Avera is done before Hesia, that's also Yehari Valyavo. So based on that, the Gemara says, wait a second, before Hesia, what about Esther? Esther intermarried with Achashverosh. Why was she allowed to do that for Pikuach Nefesh purposes? Isn't it also Yehari Valyavo? So the Gemara gives two answers, one of which we talked about on Purim at the Masiva. But the other answer we're going to talk about then is that the Gemara says it's Hanas Atman, that this idea that before Hesia you have to give up your life, it doesn't mean any Avera before Hesia automatically. It means that if you have an Avera that's being forced on you in public in order to show that the Jews don't care about God anymore, don't care about the Torah, so then you have to fight that with everything you got. But if the Avera is not for that purpose of showing up God or for showing the Jews don't keep the Torah anymore, the person who's forcing you to do it doesn't even care that it's an Avera. It just happens to be the something that he needs. So then that's an exception. So Achashverosh, when he married Esther, he wasn't doing so in order to undermine Judaism and to undermine God. He was doing that because he wanted to marry Esther. So fine, Hanas Atman, there was no public agenda. So the fact that it's happening in public, so then that's not automatically a Yehari Valyavo. So I would say, I would have thought, that this exception, Hanas Atman, only applies to this new idea that something that's before Hesia is always a Yehari Valyavo. And to that, there's a limitation, no, that if it's for Hesia to make a point, then yes, but for Hesia for no specific reason, and it just happens to be this is what the person wants, then it's not Yehari Valyavo. So I would think it applies to that new category, but it doesn't apply to the big three. That Avodah Zarah, Shlichus Damim, Gilui Arayos, those, it doesn't matter if it's if the motive is Hanas Atman, it doesn't change anything. That's what I would have thought. But the truth is the machlokus between the Balamor and the Ramban. That the Balamor seems to say that that heter applies to Avodah Zarah also. Because the Gemara says that you could supply the heating and the lights to a base of Anazara because of this Hanas Atman point. So says the Balamor, okay, you see, Hanas Atman applies to Anazara. And the Ramban says, no, that's not what it's saying. It's applying it to, not Anazara, but to Lufnei Iver of Anazara. That's not the same thing as Anazara. So yeah, Lufnei Iver, so then there's a way out of it. But if it was actual Avodah Zarah itself, this heter wouldn't apply. So the Ramban seems to distinguish between Lufnei Iver and the act itself, in terms of the rules. And the Balamor didn't. The Balamor assumed that if it's applicable to Lufnei Iver of Avodah Zarah, it's applicable to Avodah Zarah itself. So the Ramban therefore sees it as an aveira of tripping someone up, separate from whatever aveira we're talking about. And the Baal Mora sees it as the accessory idea that if you help with this aveira, it's as if you are doing it yourself. So far, so good. Any questions about that? Okay. So that's a major, major nafkamina of that question. The question of the accessory versus trapping someone up, this is certainly a very, very significant question, and it comes up. It comes up in this week's parsha. It comes up in other settings. It's not a small question. If a person is put in a scenario where he has to facilitate the Vodazara, Gilarayish, Nichuzdavim, so does that also have the status of Yahweh Vayav, or incredibly relevant, practical question, all from this lumbus, essentially. Another area in which it's discussed, let's say in terms of Shabbos. If you help somebody to do an active Chil Shabbos, you don't do the Chil Shabbos yourself, you've never been Mechal Shabbos in your life. But you help someone be Mechal Shabbos, so does that make you into a Mechal Shabbos? And therefore, for example, if a person does this habitually as a mummer, should we say that you are considered to be a mummer of Shabbos, which is extrapolated to be a mummer of Chol Torah Kula? That was a question that was posed by Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and would be another nafkamina of this issue. It's something which is discussed and shown in the beginning of Masechet Shabbos. But the first Mishnah in Shabbos talks about an act of hotzah, of taking a piece of food or money, mostly food, the most issues, takes the food out of a house into the public area on Shabbos because somebody came to the door to ask for it. So the Mishnah has all kinds of scenarios where the Balabas sticks his hand out and the Ani takes it from his hand, the Ani sticks his hand in the house and the Balabas puts something in the hand. All kinds of different scenarios. So sometimes the Gemara says that this one will be chayav, this one will be potter, sometimes they're both chayav. So the Rishonim ask, how could you ever have a scenario here where one is chayav and one is potter? If it takes two to do this act of Chil Shabbos, so one person maybe is doing it, but then the other one is enabling it. So the other one is in violation of the Yivah. So how could you ever say that, oh, sometimes one will be chayav and one will be potter? So the Rishonim over there, Tosfos and the Ran and others, deal with this question. And you have two basic approaches. There are some who say that we'll have to figure out an answer. Some who try to offer various suggestions why Lifnei Iver doesn't apply here in order to avoid this whole problem. While others, like an opinion in the Ran, say that it doesn't matter. Maybe it is Lifnei Iver, maybe it isn't Lifnei Iver. We're not learning Sukkos Lifnei Iver over there. We're learning Masechet Shabbos in that context. So in terms of Halachos for Shabbos, this is the rule. Is there also a violation of the Issur Lifnei Iver? Yeah, could be. That's just not the topic of that Mishnah. So in other words, if you feel you have to answer the question, you're basically saying that if it actually was Lifnei Iver, it would mean that you are partaking in the Aveira itself. But if you want to say that you don't care about the question, you're basically saying that it doesn't matter if it's Lifnei Iver, because Lifnei Iver is a separate Isser. It doesn't mean that you are partaking of the Isser itself. So right now we're interested in Chil Shabbos. So even if a person is in violation of Lifnei Iver, it doesn't make him a Mechal Shabbos. And that's not the topic the Mishnah has to concern itself. So that seems to reflect, once again, these two possibilities. You mentioned also a few other contexts in which it comes up. A couple places regarding Grusha and a Kohen. So, for example, the Gemara says in the first parak of Bava Metzia, is one of the places where this comes up, that the Gemara talks about Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. Somebody tries to commit an Aveira through an intermediary. When does that take effect and when doesn't it take effect? So the Gemara discusses that one of the considerations has to do with the messenger, the shliach. Is the shliach a bar chiyuva? Is he subject to the relevant iser that the person is trying to commit? So, for example, you have a kohen who sends the Yisrael to be mekadesh shagrusha. What would the story be then? So the Rishonim ask, well, what do you mean he's not a bar chiyuva? He's prohibited because of lufnei ivel l'sitei mishal. So that makes him a bar chiyuva. So you have, again, the same type of two approaches in the Rishonim. Some of the Rishonim say, well, let's figure out a reason if the Hebrew doesn't apply. He could get somebody else just as easily, or maybe the Yisr is not in the Kiddushin, the Yisr is in the Diyah. Many different theories try to explain why there's no Lifnei Hebrew. Or you could say that, as other Rishonim say, that yeah, there's Lifnei Hebrew, but that's not the Yisr of Bang and Grush. It doesn't make you a Bar Chiyuva in this Yisr. So it's the same question again. Do you assume that Lifnei Iver makes you partaking in the Aveira itself? Or do we say, no, it's not the Aveira itself, it's a separate issue of tripping someone else? No.
If he was already going to carry stuff into Rishis or Avim, so by you giving him something else to carry, is that a problem?
So there's a couple of different levels to approach that question, saying that he could have carried the same thing, or he could have carried
he's carrying things.
Or he's going to carry one thing, and it's going to be your one thing, or it could be somebody else's one thing. There's a couple of different ways to look at it. And I said, if he's going to carry something, it's just a question of, well, he's going to get food somewhere. So he's going to stop at your house if he gets food from you, or he'll get it from somewhere else.
No, I mean, he's already carrying something.
Right, he's already carrying. Right, so then it's a question of Riboy Ha'isr. So there is a Ritva, which we'll come back to, where the Ritva seems to say that Marba and Isser is not subject to Lifnei Iver L'sitei Mishal, but the later Sforim modify what the impact of that is.
I mean, is there more of a Chilul Shabbos by carrying more? Or is once you go past the certain...
Yeah, so you're getting a little bit into a next year topic. This is the first sig in the beginning of Shabbos. But the issue is going to be focusing on next year, actually, the same Gemara. So that's an interesting question. The Pashtus is that on some level there is some Aveira. What it means exactly, you have to figure it out. And within the context of Lifnei Iver, so we see there's a mitzvah who says that if you're just increasing the Isser without making a new one, then it's not Lifnei Iver, and we'll come back to that, whether or not that's the whole story. So another just example in terms of the Kohen, that the Gemara Nivamis has a pasuk to say that anyone who a Kohen is not allowed to marry, there's also an Isser on that woman to marry the Kohen. That's not just in his direction, it goes in both directions. So again, the Rishonim say, well, yeah, of course it's also for her, because there's an Aveira of the Yivam L'Sitei Mishal. So I need a pasuk to say that. And again, you have the same two approaches. You have to try to explain why there is no Lifnei Iver. Or do you say, yeah, there could be Lifnei Iver, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the Isser of a Kohen marrying, let's say, a Grusha. And therefore, the fact that it's already Lifnei Iver is not part of the discussion. So essentially, it's really the same two possibilities. So far, so good? Any questions about anything so far? Okay, so those are most of the issues contained within that first big chakira. The second big chakira that's asked has to do with the following question. So let's say if I give Jonathan a cheeseburger to eat at 12 o'clock, I give him a cheeseburger for lunch, and he eats the cheeseburger for dinner at 6 o'clock. So I violated Lifnei Iver L'Sitei Mishal. But the question is, when did I violate it? Did I violate it at 12 o'clock when I gave it to him? Or did I violate it at 6 o'clock when he ate it? Now maybe you'll say to me, well, who really cares? It's going to really matter in Shamayim, we blame you for an act of Lifnei Iver. But it happened at 3 o'clock versus at 12 o'clock versus at 6 o'clock, does it matter? So it may not matter so much, except it has a major nafkamina, what happens if the person never commits the Aveira? So then, will we say, I violate the Aveira anyway by giving him this Mechshol? Or should we say, no, I'm not going to be in violation of the Aveira unless he actually commits the Aveira? But if it ends up that he doesn't commit the Aveira, so fine, so then I dodge the bullet. So this really seems to tie in to the previous Chakira, which ties in, as we said, to the question of the Psukim. That if you want to say that it's an accessory idea, I join in on his Aveira, so then if he doesn't actually commit the Aveira, I should be off the hook. But if the Yisr is in tripping the person up, and we know from the way the Pasuk is phrased, that the Yisr is not only if you actually make the person fall, but if you simply put the Mechshol in front of them, so then if I provide the Aveira, so then it shouldn't really matter what actually happens after. This is a question that was posed by the Sefer Yad Malachi, and he notes a few examples that seem to contradict each other. And on the one hand, the Gemara Masechas Mo'ikot, question, yeah?
Don't they both focus on the fact that if he doesn't commit the sin, then it shouldn't be a problem? Because the accessory pshat would be that you're chayav the same isser that he's chayav.
Right, so that's how we get it, yeah?
And the other one is making him fall, and since he never fell, so what's the problem?
So you could say that, except that's not what the pasuk actually says. Right? The pasuk doesn't say, don't trip up a blind person. The pasuk says, do not put a stumbling block before him. So it doesn't seem to require that he actually falls. Just the presenting of the danger is enough. Now, we're going to have to get into some more details about that, because while that is the case, we have to have some kind of parameters, because what makes something into a mitzvah and what's not a mitzvah? Now, we gave the example, let's say I find some non-kosher food in the and I confiscate it and I give it to the banan. So did I violate the favor because I gave this tray food to the banal and the yeshiva? So no, because the presumption is it's not a mechshol for him. He's not likely to eat it. If he has a weakness for non-kosher food, so then to facilitate that non-kosher food eating, so then you're in violation of putting a mechshol there. But if it's not a mechshol for them, because there's no reason to think that they're going to be tempted to eat this, so then it's not even a mechshol. But if a person is at risk for the Aveira, so then putting the mechshol there is already apparently the Isser in the Torah, even if it doesn't actually result in him sinning. So basically, Menachem, I think conceptually, it makes a lot of sense to say that that's what the Isser would mean. Either way, it has to actually happen. But because of the way the Pasuk is phrased, we don't necessarily put it that way. So just to illustrate that point, actually, so the Yad Malachi notes that there are different Gemaras that seem to point you in different directions. So on the one hand, for example, the Gemara in the first Parak of Moed Katan says that if one hits his adult child, he's in violation of Lifnei Iver. And by the way, the term adult could mean 5 or 6 years old, depending on how you understand what it's talking about. But the concern is that the child will hit back at the parent. Therefore commit a big avera. So there it sounds like the person's in violation of lifnei iver from the moment they provoke this response, regardless of what actually happens. Seems to be a proof that there is lifnei iver right away. On the other hand, there is the Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin, where the Gemara says that someone tore up expensive silk in the presence of his son in order to see if his son would react and treat him disrespectfully. The Gemara says, well, that sounds like a bad idea, because what if the son does get mad? Then you'll be in violation of the Iver Lo Sithei Mechshol. So it sounds like from that Gemara that simply creating this situation is not the Aveira Lifnei Iver, but that it's only going to be Lifnei Iver if the guy actually commits the Aveira himself. That's the Gemara Masechta Kiddushin towards the end of the first part. So that seems to be a proof in the other direction. However, Si Pesach Frank, we mentioned Hesed Tshuva, where he says you could argue with that proof, and you could say that the Gemara only means to say, like we mentioned a few minutes ago, that you have to establish that something is a michshol. Not everybody is going to respond at all to this, so for them it's not even a michshol.
He's commenting on Gemara Kiddushin.
Yeah. So when the Gemara says maybe he'll get angry and you're going to violate with Ne'iver, the Gemara is just explaining how is there a michshol there. There is a michshol because this person may actually get angry. But it doesn't mean to say that if he doesn't get angry, then there's no lifnei iver. And this also is relevant. There is another proof you could bring from a Gemara in Bava Metzia, in the end of Eizahu Neshech. So there is a Gemara that prompts a lot of discussion. There's a lot of analysis. Why is it that we don't seem to observe this din at all today, which is a fair question, an open discussion. But Gemara has a din that we don't seem to observe at all, that one should not lend money without witnesses. Why? Because, as Rashi says, Sha'olo belibo lichpor, that the person is going to have a thought that he could get away with it if he's going to deny the loan. So there as well, it kind of sounds like just the very prompting of the Aveira, even if it doesn't happen anytime soon, theoretically could also be an Isser Lifnei Iver. Hi.
Can you say over there that Rashi would be explaining the Gemara as being a sort of a Xeder Hadar Banan, so you won't, like Hagdar, so you won't come to Lifnei Iver that he'll...
You think we need some kind of source to say it's Hadar Banan.
Was it a Torah source that didn't say that then?
To say that you should...
You need to have witnesses? Maybe it's just Xeder Hadar Banan, to not on the...
Well, the Gemara connects it to Lifnei Iver, let's see, Tei Michshol. I mean, as far as we know. Right, you know, we don't know if there's any reason to distinguish.
Except for the fact that Shver is a Gemara, which implies that you're over.
Right, so this Gemara, again, it's on a Hey Yomid base. Yeah, this is, and again, as we mentioned, the idea of Lifnei Iver is invoked so many times in Shas, including so many times above Metzia. So on this one daf, it's invoked twice. On this one Amud, right? In Heyman Beis above Metzia, there's two separate references to Lifnei Iver. One was in the context of Ribbis, which we discussed last week, about anybody who facilitates the transaction of Ribbis in violation of Lifnei Iver. That's what the Mishnah talks about. And then the Gemara also has a statement here towards the bottom of the page. Komish Yesh Lo Mos Son, over with an evil. So this is the question of the Ad Malachi, and it has a lot of implications and ties into the original question that we're asking also. That if it's an accessory pshat, then you're an accessory when it actually happens. If it stays in the Gemara, so then that if you're tripping a person up, so then you're tripping them up through the placement of a michshol, and that could happen even if the guy doesn't do the aver. Okay, so far so good. So we'll say another few words before mincha, but that's like the major opening chunk of the sugya, because we've established what these two big questions are and how they tie into each other and how it ties into the opening question that we had about the whole relationship of the pasuk and the isser. So before we break from mincha, I'll just mention one or two other major ideas here. So a very important position is that of the Amun HaShmuel. The Amun HaShmuel maintains a big Chiddush Lahalacha, and he's quoted in a lot of the Nosei Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch, that if somebody, if somebody wants to do an Aveira and you help them, and it happens to be that the Aveira doesn't apply to you, so then, says the Amun HaShmuel, you're not in violation of me either. It's a big chiddush. And it only makes sense if you say the accessory pshat. If you say that lifnei ivra means that I am doing the avera with the other guy, so then you could make an argument that if the isser doesn't apply to me, there's no isser lifnei ivra. If I'm allowed to do the action straight out, why should it be so terrible if I help somebody else do it? Now, it's not the only way to see things. You could also imagine an idea that the accessory pshat means that the Aveira applies to whoever it applies to. But in general, for you to even help an Aveira is an Aveira. So even if this particular Aveira wouldn't apply to you, by getting involved, you're essentially making it apply to you. So you don't have to say like the Amun HaShmuel if you follow that perspective. But it's the only way that it makes sense. If you say that the Isser is the placement of the Mechshol against the other guy, so then you have a question, why should that not apply even if you're not subject to the Isser? And indeed, that was the premise of the question that that Reb Chaim Ozer and his Tshuvas Achiezer has against this view of the Amun HaShmuel. Because, says Reb Chaim Ozer, so maybe you're going to try to tell me that the Aveira of helping someone to sin, so maybe you'll tell me that that doesn't apply if the Aveira isn't relevant to the Aveira. But it should still be lifnei ivra anyway. Because we know the lifnei ivra also includes another component. But it also includes giving someone bad advice. So ein lecha bad advice, gadol mizeh. You can't claim that if you're helping somebody to do an aveira, even if the aveira doesn't apply to you. So shouldn't that at least be bad advice? Isn't that at least a problem from that perspective? So Chaim Ozer has a big yesod. And he says that the difference is that if I give somebody bad advice, they're violating an isser b'shogeg. Or that's a, not necessarily violating an isser, they're tripping, however they trip, whether it's in whatever realm of life. But they're essentially shogeg. They don't know that the advice that they're being given is bad advice. So that's what it takes in order for it to be a violation of the bad advice of the either, that the person you're giving it to doesn't know it's bad advice. But with the Aveira, if you help somebody to do an Aveira, so it might be that the sinner is intentional. He's been mazed. So if it's bemazed, so then that's not subject to the bad advice prohibition. So Reb Chaim Ozer says a major yesod here, that essentially there are different parameters for two types of lifnei ivra. Lifnei ivra with bad advice and lifnei ivra with averus have two different sets of rules. And the bad advice is premised on the idea that it's b'shogeg. While helping somebody with an avera is not necessarily limited to the assumption that the guy is a shogeg. So Reb Chaim Ozer's explanation clearly puts it that these two Yisurim are completely different from each other. And that the Pasuk is really yielding different concepts within one pasuk. So we just mentioned parenthetically that Rabbi Aaron Levine, Zechtak Bracha, in one of his svarim, so he notes that the prohibition of Anas Devarah, and from our fourth parak, Yimud, so the Mishnah at the end of the fourth parak lists off a bunch of cases where one is in violation of Anas Devarah, of hurting someone's feelings, of causing someone pain through words. So Rashi in Chumash, Rashi adds another example, giving somebody bad advice. So I, as Ravine notes, don't we already have this Isser anyway? Because of the Isser of Ufna'iva lo sitein mechshol. So why do we need to know that it's also Anas Devarah to give somebody bad advice? So he wanted to suggest that the Isser of Ufna'iva in terms of bad advice will only apply if the guy is clueless, doesn't know that it's bad advice. So then I led him astray, that's the favor. But if he does know it's bad advice, so he's not going to follow it, so then he's going to think that I gave him this bad advice to make fun of him. And therefore he's going to feel offended, so there'll be an off the bargain from that, even without there being necessarily with the either. In the advice sense. Okay, any questions about any of that? Any issues? All right, there are a few other follow-up issues that we'll have to pick up with, God willing, next week, but what we said so far is really the bulk of a lot of the major points, and there's still some important stuff for follow-up, but a lot of the major issues, I think we got a pretty good chunk in. All right, so we will stop here. We'll, who wants to...